and while belting a Bordeaux, pairing the best wine and picking the next show, hear Broadway guests and us acting like loons. This you can find here on Tennyson Tunes. When Ben Bradley cries, when the vine dies, whether June's or moon's, I simply turn to my favorite thing, and they are a Tennyson Tunes.
Welcome to Tennyson Tunes. I'm Jessica.
I'm Jimmy. Hi, friends. Hi, Mom.
Hi, friends. Hi, Moms. Jimmy.
Jessica.
I haven't seen you all day.
I haven't seen you all day, except we've been together all day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, listeners, I am doing my New York trip. I am still here, even though I am still teaching in Dallas. Those kids have a test coming up. They're going to love me. But because I'm here in New York, Jimmy and I get to hang out all the time.
Woo!
So here we are again. Enough with the how was your week.
Let's get
I know
into
how your week
it.
Was.
Yes, we already hate each other. Let's get into
this. We're ready. Okay, so here we are with our special guests. Do you want to introduce them?
I would love to introduce
Thank
them.
You.
The duo Kerrigan and Loudermilk will have Kate Kerrigan and Brian Loudermilk.
Hello!
Hi, guys.
Hey, everybody.
Here we are. Okay, just make sure that I have all my notes up and that we are ready to go, because we're going to get into this wine, Jimmy.
Oh, we're doing already?
We're getting into it.
Okay.
So I'm going to have you open it up.
Thank you.
Make sure that it sounds really great on the mic while I talk about it. That was not exciting. That was really not exciting.
I barely heard it pop at all.
I know. Well, oh well.
It does look like a nice afternoon wine. And
it is
afternoon.
It is. So we're dealing with a trousseau. So Jimmy and I did an episode a couple weeks ago where we highlighted a trousseau on our Red, White, and Crew thing for 4th of July. And trousseau is like old vine. Like, think like Zinfandel, right? And this comes to us from Australia. And Australia has had really great wines historically, but not necessarily trousseau. And so we're going to talk about it a little bit today. So we're going to get like rhubarb and red fruit in there. And this wine in particular, I was really excited to do it with you all because it's a winemaking team.
Oh,
right?
A wine collaboration?
Ooh. Yes.
Ooh. Okay.
So they live in Australia.
I was like really nervous for like why this wine has been paired with our work. It's like, this is like a really sticky, sweet wine that you really just want occasionally. You really don't want very much of it.
You drink 2 seconds of it, and then you're like, I'm good for another month or so.
So these winemaker partners are Susie Hilder and Wayne Ahrens, and they were viticulturists that got like super into wine, and so they're foodies and wine people, and their style of wine is super food friendly, but it's also, of course, biodynamic and organic.
Yes.
So it's super natural. So let's go ahead and smell it.
Ooh. It's funky.
It doesn't smell.
Yeah, it's she's earthy.
Right? Right? Very natural, and they don't add a ton of sulfites. They don't do a lot of additives to it.
There's some vinegar in there.
Yeah.
Listeners, I mean, it smells. Yeah, it's really funky.
I love that they use the words in here. Some nice stalky tannin.
It smells like a French cheese.
It smells so much like cheese.
It's like a French.
There you
Which
go.
Is just like your music. It's like a
like
fine
a French cheese.
My music is smelly and funky.
Funk is what I think of when I think of Brian Loudermilk music.
It brings so much funk.
This is a nice deep bass.
There you
just
go.
Clapping away.
Well, let's go ahead and try this. It's from Barossa Valley in Australia. So let's go and try it.
All right.
Wow. It tastes like cheese.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Guys, this wine is called Scarlet Pimpernel, and it doesn't taste at all like the Frank Wildhorn musical Scarlet Pimpernel.
It's Small Fry Pimpernel. Maybe
there we go. Small Fry. Small Fry is the name of their winemaking group that they have there in Australia.
What Scarlet Pimpernel songs should we sing? Should we sing?
This is a lot of
Don't turn away, it's only love. Only the touch that frees you. You thought I didn't know more words. Let it release you. Take the chance. It's only love. Let it come to you slowly. Open your heart and show me. Don't be afraid. It's only love. Really? Nobody?
Guys, welcome to Tanas and Tunes, starring Brian Loudermilk.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, if you're going to put a bottle of wine called Pimpernel in front of me, I'm going to
sing. You
got to
do it.
If you wanted us to sing, you would ask to do Cats. That's it.
Yes. Really?
Yeah. That's how we met.
That's how we met. Jam.
Seriously?
Doing Cats.
We met doing Cats.
Well, if I had to pair a musical with this wine, I would actually probably not go with Frank Wildhorn. I would say this wine tastes like Dave Malloy to me.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, this is the Dave Malloy wine.
Oh my goodness. I actually am tasting some like berries.
It's definitely red fruit forward. We've got some rhubarb in there, like some herbal qualities to it.
Like you could be describing Natasha Pierre as you talk about it. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
and the cool thing is too that it's done with carbonic maceration, which is totally Natasha Pierre.
That's like totally funky. How much Natasha Pierre happened. Absolutely. And the entire production was biodegradable.
Nice.
Biodegradable, compostable.
Yeah. Well, you know I love an organic minded company.
Gotta think about the earth, people.
We're gonna go ahead and sip on this while we talk about you. The whole reason that we're here, right?
Can you get more
wine?
I'm only here
you.
For the Pimpernel.
Obviously.
So
well,
if you ever want to, like, you know, feel free to sing another song, by all means, please just
do
like
not give him that latitude. He will take that latitude.
Do not doubt my knowledge of the Pimpernel score.
No, I want to.
Not anymore. I have no doubts.
I want a full one-person musical of that, just you.
It's a little like a shrub.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
a little
funky.
Like a shrub. Like the vinegary, definitely the rhubarb. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it, but I also did drink some apple cider vinegar this morning. There you go. It doesn't
You're
have
into it.
It reminds me of that.
It doesn't have the well, Trousseau is like a super tannic grape. It's like really thick-skinned. And so
yes.
I think a lot of that is in there.
I'm feeling that. Yeah.
Never doubt that your courage will grow. Hold your head even higher as into the fire we go.
Yes.
Into hell. Onward. Oh. I think that's the opening.
That's so good.
Yeah. Do they have a classic Cahoots moment?
What do you mean?
Like a really high...
Are there very high tenor moments?
Yes.
I'm not as familiar with the backup vocals.
Oh, okay. You're finding the limits of your knowledge.
There we go.
Let's be real. I actually only know the power ballads. But thankfully, the score to Pimpernel is 98%
yes,
power ballads.
Exactly.
Is
it all just power ballads?
Wild.
Yeah.
So, take us through it. How long have you been working together? How did you meet?
We met on the train on our way here.
Great. Mm-hmm.
No, we go all the way back, don't we?
Yeah, Brian was in a production of Lost in Yonkers that my dad directed when he was 10, I think. I was about 12. And then we were, you know, we did summer theater together as kids, at YPHW, Young People's Theater Workshop, and at Upper Darby Summer Stage. And we were in... Little Shop of Horrors together.
Yes.
We basically started making things together when we were in middle school.
Yeah.
The things we were making were pretty weird. Like, we made everybody sing the book report from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
We were very serious about it. No one else knew why they were there in that rehearsal room.
It was like getting very involved with people's monologues. I was getting very involved with people's performances of Aaron's and Flaherty songs. And we, we didn't have a natural affinity. We did not have a natural affinity for each other.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually kind of repelled by each other because we were both like meddling in other people's art. But we certainly were aware of each other and aware that the other person was making exciting things.
Yeah.
So when I was moving to New York around the time I was 18 and Kate was in New York, we reconnected and we thought, well, maybe we should start making things together.
Yeah, I love that. Huh? Well, I know that I first heard a lot of your songs when I was in college and it was basically
no,
YouTube.
No, someone listening to our songs on YouTube. While right. in college?
So,
I've never heard of such a thing.
So can you speak to how the expansion of the internet kind of led to the expansion of your music?
Yeah, I mean, it was like one of those little mini Cambrian explosions where we were fortuitous enough to have our songs in the right place at the right time, I would say. There were a little tribe of us putting our songs on the internet. I will take a little bit of ownership for that because I've been thinking about the internet a lot lately. And for me, I just really wanted to be known and heard, and I wanted my songs out there. And something I know now that I'm not sure I knew then is that for me, a song is never finished until other people are singing it, until it's like out in the world in that way. To me, like whether that recording and that performance of it is a professional or an amateur recording, there's like pretty much no distinction for me.
Yeah.
It's just whether it's alive. And for me, like a song must become alive. It must be given life. And it's like a dangerous thing inside of me until that moment.
Yeah.
So YouTube was something that existed and pretty user-friendly and easy to get things on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just kind of started.
I love it. Yeah.
And I think that I was not as focused on putting up video, but once the community started to build around us, I was really curious about that and really interested in it. And fostering that community felt really natural to me.
Yeah.
And I felt like it felt really clear to me that these are people who we should be very grateful for. And so finding ways to bring them into our work and help them find more things that we were making and talk to them about what they liked about what we were making, and build that relationship. That was sort of, I think, where I got interested in what the internet had to offer for us.
Yeah.
Kate and I were very excited separately and then together about what could happen from fandom of musical theater online. One of the first things we did together in that space was a project called the Freshman Experiment, where we got two 18-year-old girls to blog about their lives in high school or in college, their freshman year of college, and we wrote songs based on those blog posts. We did it completely transparently, where like every draft, every little idea was up there on this blog.
Wow.
And a lot of songs that people really fell in love with, How to Return Home, is based on a blog post about a girl who was returning home on her Thanksgiving break. Last Week's Alcohol is based on a series of blog posts about like this epic night a girl had in college. So we were always kind of interested not just in how you could release art into the world online, but how you could be in dialogue with people.
Yeah. Story behind that. I want to talk about your experience with BMI. So for our listeners, that's the Lemon Angle Musical Theater Workshop, which is kind of like an incubator for Broadway creative people. Can you tell us about some of the presentations that just like stick in your head to this day?
Oh, I just remember no one liking me very much there.
Okay.
And we had very similar experiences.
Oh, yeah. I just remember them being like, oh, we know what good songs are, and yours aren't them. And I remember being pretty incapable at the time of writing songs that they would like. And thankfully, I would say I credit them with, despite how they tried, not stopping me from writing.
I had a very different experience.
Everybody loves you.
No, I think I'm a good student. I did well in classroom environments always, and I pretty quickly realized that there were ways to not even work the system, but play within the rules that they were giving mm-hmm. me, and then find ways to break the rules that would be received in positive ways. And so I was always trying to I was always trying to walk this line between doing what they asked me to do and doing something that's slightly left or right of what mm-hmm. they were asking me to do. And I think I was like, 50 to 60% successful at that, which was enough that they didn't hate me. but then, I mean, Brian and I definitely have our moments where we have moments where we were like eviscerated at BMI. And I think that that's okay. We were always trying to do something a little outside of the box, and that place is absolutely about the foundations of what a musical has always been. And for me, that was great because it was good to know what I was pushing against. And it's also, I think, much friendlier to lyricists than it is to composers.
Right.
Or that was my experience of it.
I'll tell a story that is maybe like gauche to tell.
Ooh.
But it was one of the proudest moments of my life. So here goes. It was during this very brief period of time. I went to BMI first. I was very quick to jump into things when I arrived in New York, and Kate went a few years after me.
Brian was 18 when he was in BMI.
I started BMI when I was 18.
Which is, I think, a factor.
Wow.
And I started posting, and I started posting songs on YouTube when I was 21, 22.
Right.
I started very, very early, and certainly without knowing any better about anything. Right. Kate has always been more of a, let me get a little information first. She got some information in BMI, and after she did, we both said, well, let's go back for like a year or two. Let's see, or really it ended up being, I think, 6 months. But let's go back in, like now that we're working together. And we did, and we went in, and Maury Yeston was the guest host and was moderating the class while someone was on a break.
This is, by the way, definitely a little gauche for us to tell this story.
Yeah, it really is. But listen, you asked. And
yes, and we got some wine in us.
Yes, let me tell you, this was one of the proudest moments of my life. We presented a song called The Girl Who Drove Away, which we had just written that week, and which at the time was the opening number of a show that would become The Mad Ones. It was
And even in its current form, is there's a version of that song that's the opening number.
Absolutely. And for us, it was also a keystone song where you write it and it teaches you an enormous amount about the piece. The song starts with an 18-year-old girl standing on stage looking straight out at the audience and singing the words, I really don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know. I am sorry, Kate. I don't have anything to share. I guess I'm here to explain myself why I went and where.
I really don't know what I'm doing here. I don't have anything to share. I guess I'm here to explain myself. Why I went and where. And I guess that's
And that launches into 4 minutes of her being a bit of an unreliable narrator and also like taking up some space and leading you through a song that kind of jumps through time a little bit. And
it's an I Want song. We were playing with the idea of an I Want song where the person wants something that's really negative. She wants the present to be different than the present is.
And she has an enormous amount of anxiety. I really don't know what I'm doing here. Really, you're starting your show with a girl who's saying, don't look at me. Don't look at my story. Do not give this story. This story isn't worth your attention. And that was a calculated, planned thought. And this was a human that was fully realized to Kate and I. And so we presented the song. And everyone went around the room saying not just that the song didn't work, but also that the character didn't work, that basically you could not put that person on stage.
And that you aren't allowed to have that kind of song in a musical. People were kind of offended by it. Like, they were offended by the kind of I Want that we'd created.
And
how
are these
dare
students?
You,
or are
these are all, well, this was in the advanced class.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was people who are who've gone through the 2-year program and graduated, and then you're allowed to stay on and continue to develop your work in this room. And so we were like in this advanced program where everybody, you can be there for life. So some people had been there for 20 years, some of the people had been there for 2. This was our first year in that advance.
Mm-hmm. And I will say,
my first year.
There was a basic respect for the craft. I know how to write melodies. Kate knows how to write lyrics. I mean, we know what we're doing, and it wasn't that. It was more, this is not an appropriate use of your skills. How dare you put people in a theater and start with the words, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't have anything to share. Concentrate your energies on more worthy characters and more worthy situations. So that kind of dies down, and Maury Yeston began to speak. And the first
thing he did was he just read the entire lyric again. He was like, let me just read this all again. And he read the entire lyric. And at that point, you know, your cheeks are burning because people have been saying not great stuff about everything you've written.
And we were also the last to present. Class had been going over because people were, you know, basically discussing whether or not musical theater songs can contain true ambivalence. And Maury Yeston said, everyone sit down, we're going to be here for a minute. And he basically lectured everyone on how audiences are often prepared for things that are novel and rarely for things that are new. And it was like one of the most lovely moments of my life.
I wanted to crawl under a rock.
No, for sure. It was
really painful to be standing up there in front of this group of people who clearly hated the thing you did, and then
they didn't hate it less by the end.
No, they hated it more because he was standing there lecturing them about how it was more interesting than other things that he had seen that day.
Yeah.
And so we're you're still standing up there by the piano. And Brian at least was behind a piano. I'm just standing there, like, hiding behind the piano.
And Maury Yeston was not saying that this was a phenomenal song.
No.
And he wasn't saying this was an intro to a phenomenal musical. It ended up getting cut. It was actually, in fact, not a good way to start our musical. But what he was defending was our right to genuinely try and write a sort of song that hadn't been written before. And for us, those moments where you see someone and you lock eyes across a crowded room and someone says, I see you, I see what you're making, and I want to help give you that space to make something that's genuinely new. That's what I think has enabled us to continue to attempt together to write songs, not necessarily because they'll be successful, not necessarily because there's something that the largest number of people want, but because they feel to us like songs that no one's written before.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. My only BMI story is performing in the advanced class for somebody that was trying a new song. And at the end of it, they were talking about the piece, but I also felt like I'm standing there being like, I could have acted that better. Like, they just don't see it because it was my fault. Like, I didn't do this well. And so I think everyone in that room is like, it was like sharks going after meat.
Yeah,
why did
anyone do this then?
Hopping.
I think that it can be difficult to have a group of people that are being asked to give feedback every week.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a difficult kind of scenario. I think it's not necessarily the most positive way of receiving feedback. I just did a master class where I did 2 weeks with some actors. And the first week they brought in something of their own. The second week they did something of mine. And the great thing about that for them was that, like, we had this brand new rapport. I had no baggage. Mm-hmm. I walked in the room. We talked. We came up with an idea for what they could work on. They worked on it. And then we got to the other side of it. We talked about what they had done. And then we were done.
Right.
That's it. And there's something, if it's about critiquing, I think that's a more positive relationship.
Right.
I think with critiquing with an ongoing group, unless it's small enough that group has an enormous amount of respect for each other, and mm-hmm. they all do believe that everyone in the room deserves to be there, which is, I think, the intent of the Lehman Engel workshop.
Yes.
I think that sometimes that can get lost, depending on who, like, depending on the moderator, depending on the year, depending on who's there.
Who's there, yeah.
And for us, my most vivid memory of that was actually the silence that we both took after it happened. We, like, walked out of that room. We went to the elevator. We took the elevator down. We walked down the street. We didn't speak
that
to
too.
Each other.
I remember just not speaking.
And then, like, 5 blocks away, we turned to each other, and one of us said, well, I guess we're never going back to BMI. That was that. It was both, like, the best and worst that could have possibly happened,
yeah.
But that was, like, in a nutshell, our personal experience of it.
Of course.
I credit them with a lot of the craft that I have. And I had a great experience with Pat Cook and Rick Fryer, and they were really wonderful to me. And so
many great things have come out of BMI, like so many great projects.
And I think especially comedy is really, really well honed in there. Mm-hmm. Comedy plays with tropes that are not often as new. The ways you come at comedy is new, but a lot of times the craft that you use for comedy is about learning like the way that it works.
Right.
Unless you're doing comedy of like the absurd comedy that's really far afield from what musical comedy is, but they're so good at that.
Yeah.
And it happens to be not especially what I am doing.
Yeah.
And even like the kind of comedy that we do is pretty weird. So the weirdness of what we're bringing to the table wasn't a good fit for BMI, but I learned a lot from
that. Yeah. Well, and that kind of brings me to theater work. So you write for a lot of these shows that are geared towards kids. Now, how has that been different? Like, what's your favorite part of writing these shows for theater works and
well, they get produced. My favorite thing about writing for theater works is that our shows get produced and get seen by an audience.
Right. That's awesome.
And that you're on this great trajectory of, I mean, the first one that we wrote was a 2-year process. It was the first time we got paid to write, or at least the first time I got paid to write. It was the first commission we ever got. And it was right out of the gate. We were kids. And we were able to know that our show was going to be off Broadway in 2 years, which is incredible. And to have the timeline of this is how you're going to workshop it, you're going to tour it and see these audiences with it. You're going to see 1,000 kids see the show before you go off Broadway.
Great.
Make huge changes. Mm-hmm. And the process was clear and defined, and there were very clear deadlines. And there have been very few producerial experiences that we've had that have been quite so clear.
That's awesome. You write a musical, and then people perform it, and people see it. Oh, it's heaven.
What?
It's crazy.
I don't like that.
We just did one this past year that was only, it was a year-long process. So it was so fast. We wrote it with another writer so that we could get it done quickly enough. But that process, I mean, it's on the road already, and we started writing it in October.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that's so really, really neat.
So, yeah, of course we go back to them. When they call us, we go back. We're like, we'd love to do a show that will happen.
Right.
We write very, very quickly. So the fact that our musicals take 10 to 15 years to be produced is not necessarily as compatible with people who can write a pretty good song in 30 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
But you also write complex songs, adult
songs.
Only sometimes.
Is there a different like, way of thinking when you're writing for theater works?
I wouldn't say so. Not at all. No.
You're writing a show that's about certain kinds of characters, right? So like, if you're writing a show that's about a 6-year-old, you're gonna write with the emotions of a 6-year-old, and the emotions of the 6-year-old are funnier than the emotions of an adult, mostly because they're more extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much that can happen within 30 seconds with a 6-year-old. But the actual experience of like diving into anyone's story is the same. You have to just honor that story. You can't make fun of it, from my perspective.
Yeah,
My Party Dress is a song from a TYA musical that I think
six
is...
6 minutes long.
it's she's lengthy, and I think it's a real portrayal of what it's like to be a pretty anxious 6-year-old.
Do you like my party dress? I am pirouette and rustle. I'm my Alexos and Brussels. That's where Brussels bros are from. I've toured Brussels and Paris and Vienna. And this one time we pretended to go to Rome, but we went to Iceland. And in Iceland, my dad presided over an international corporate trade hearing. And we saw the rest of the ballet. My dance class is on Saturday. The Sora and the Sleeve say I'm much more bright than I appear. I shall say right, it's very clear that I'll be in the Nutcracker next year. And a mouse and a soul.
Right. And I think that it follows its idea all the way through as far as it can possibly go. I think it's, like, pretty weird and also, like, holds together as a song, and I'm really proud of it. And, yeah, like, in the touring version of it, it's, like, a minute and a half long. And we had to, like, make some compromises, but it's still fundamentally the same idea. Yeah, I mean, songs are a little shorter. But I don't think there are any less our songs, and they still have our imprint on them.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Like the vampires in Twilight. I thought they like imprint.
Oh,
or
it's, no, it's the werewolves, right? The werewolf imprinted. I don't know how it works. But all I know is
really grateful to have never read any of the Twilight books, and just to always every once in a while like get to
what's happening.
Yeah, just to get to try and take a whack at it.
All I know is that a werewolf falls in love with a baby at the end.
Listen, all I really know is that 50 Shades of Grey started out as Twilight fanfic. It's just one of my favorite things that's happened in the history of human civilization.
I just like that there's now a movie. I just watched it on a plane, The Book Club, that's like based
What is that movie?
It's
based off of 50 Shades of Grey.
No!
Yes!
No,
yes,
it's
yes,
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 no!
Yes. Well, no, it's
so
not based
good.
On 50 Shades of Grey.
No, it's about the old women reading 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, that's so good. Does that mean I can now make a movie about me watching The Book Club?
Yes.
That should be your web series.
Weird. That's so weird.
Oh,
great.
And then that is your web series, and then
An
we
opera.
Will do a podcast
about that web series. Oh, God. Maybe we're just out of art. Maybe BMI was right.
Hello.
Boring, right? I want to talk for just a second about newmusicaltheater.com. Because I used to write for Green Room.
Yeah.
Sweet. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about the inspiration of creating a resource for musical theater people like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once we were putting our things on the YouTube, so I had a little website where people would send me $5 in the mail, and I would send them back the sheet music, and that was how I was doing it. Okay. And then that became a little overwhelming. So then I started to use PayPal, and then that became a little overwhelming. And so
and there was that one day when somebody like called you during Shabbat because there was like a troubleshooting number.
No, it was Passover. I was at my parents' Passover ceremony, and my phone kept ringing. And I answered the phone, and I was like, "I'm so sorry." And I like stepped out to answer the phone. And it was some like musical theater student in Florida that's like, "My, you know, say the word isn't downloading correctly." I was like, "I'm really sorry you're experiencing that."
You did
I'm in the middle of my Seder.
You
I still do it. Who do you think does it?
But it took the girl like probably a solid like 5 minutes to realize that she was talking to the author of the Word. At which point she became very nice. She thought she was talking to some overseas tech person. And that I think that was the moment where we started looking for what is the real system for this. And we built some kind of system. It's a hard thing to do to make a space like that. And
I'm really proud that we did it. I'm really proud that that we were able to hold on to our rights and to pay our friends. Like once every quarter when I like do the grueling task of paying all the writers out from the site, I get like a nice email from Nick Blamire being like, "Dude, thank you. This is like money that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Mm-hmm. And this is really cool that like, you know, I can pay for my car rental while I'm out of town this week because the theater didn't pay for it." That's literally the email I got last month. And like, really, just pay for people's car rentals.
Right.
Regional
that's
theater
the story
just,
here.
Just,
that's the takeaway.
That's the
seriously,
tagline.
Like, my goodness, if you're going to be in like L.A., like you have to have a car. Anyway.
Got their car.
So that's what New Musical Theater does is it enables Nick Blamire to be able to rent a car when
there
he's traveling for work.
You should
Which
use that as
it.
The tagline.
Honestly, really, I wish that I could like let a lot of musical theater students know that the difference between whether you buy it from us or from Music Notes is the difference between like a couple extra dollars for Nick Blamire and like it going directly to him and like that's really cool. I'm proud that we did it.
I loved writing for it too. Like having that space to be able to work and write as I was learning things share that was really neat.
Definitely a through line for Kate and I is that there just end up being these moments where we can't believe something doesn't exist in the world. And so we tend to just have the terrible thought of, well, we should just make it. But really it comes from a period of time where you're just like, you can't believe that something doesn't exist.
Well, and we have a need, and we realize that somebody else has that same exact problem, same need, and then
I didn't want someone to take 50% of our money, or 85% of our money in exchange for selling our sheet music for us, and I also didn't want to have to take phone calls on Passover. So...
can we do one more song? I want to talk about very quickly. I know we're rounding up.
Game.
but I just want to talk about the Bad Years, the immersive musical experience. How did that come about? Where did the idea come from? How does it maybe even like? What are your like pie in the sky thoughts about how it works?
Well, that one we still do have a producer for, and that is. Theoretically, as of this week, moving forward, everyone knock on something.
Congratulations.
Talk about an endeavor. It is a very expensive proposition to do like a 20,000 square foot immersive, fully immersive musical. If and when it happens, it will be. It is not environmental. It is truly immersive, and it is freely immersive in that the audience is free to move about during the piece. It's also geometric storytelling in that there are multiple plots happening at the same time, multiple characters you can follow that intersect in different ways, and multiple songs happening at the same time. At last count, there were somewhere between 80 and 90 songs in the show.
Wow,
that's amazing. Yeah, that's. Endeavor.
That is incredible.
Yeah, I think it's important to, we've sort of defined for ourselves the difference between immersive and environmental, but it's not actually something that's defined in our industry. The way that we talk about immersive is connected to like the Punch Drunk, Sleep No More style of immersive, where it's ambulatory, like you're walking through a space, you get to choose what you're doing, basically imagine yourself inside of a first-person video game, and you're deciding what your fate is, versus being in an environmental show, which is like Natasha Pierre is a good example of that, where there's everything is happening around you, you feel like you're immersed in it, but you don't have any agency, you don't have any control over your environment. And so the reason that our show has like 75 songs, 80 songs, is because they're all happening at the exact same time in different rooms. There's five rooms happening, sometimes more, at any moment. And your choice is which direction are you going to go, which character are you going to follow. Do you want to play Flip Cup, or do you want to watch someone sing their heart out? And are you invested in the story? Are you invested in the environment? And that's the game that you, as the audience member, get to play. And hopefully... our dream is that you want to come back and do that again and again, and that you can follow one character the whole night, you can follow a bunch of different characters, and that you also could literally play Flip Cup all night and still have, like, a really cool experience. Our dream for this particular show is that, like, it's about coming in as an individual, coming in as a stranger, and then leaving as a member of a community. And that is also reflected in the story. So it's all these people who are sort of very loosely connected, and by the end of it, we hope. And so far in our workshops, we've been able to maintain that everyone, the audience and the actors, are all singing together by the end. So there's this fluidity you get from the place where everyone feels separate, and also you feel the distance between you and the actors at the beginning. And then by the end, you're all... emotionally in the same place.
Oh my god! And you can still play Flip Cup.
And you can still play.
Yes.
Flip Cup.
Yes!
Because it is a house party. Is the environment.
Right. Oh, so much fun.
That sounds great.
Now that we've got some wine in us, we're gonna play games right now.
Okay. So we have a really fun game.
Rapid Fire. Yeah, we're a songwriting duo as well.
Perfect. That's a really good song.
We haven't done harmony yet.
No.
We're getting there.
It's our one and only song.
We used to have two.
We used to have two.
And then we cut it.
It was terrible.
So we're going to do some rapid fire questions.
Great.
Get ready. So I'm going to go between.
And then the last question will be for both
for
of you.
For both of you.
Great.
Okay. So Brian, favorite audition song to sing?
My favorite audition to sing? Wait, how rapid fire is this supposed
rapid
to be?
Rapid fire!
Off the top of your head, what's
my favorite? You
know we're writers, right?
Or what you like to hear. What's when you get in?
Astonishing from Little Women.
I love it. I want you to sing with that. I want you to sing that one.
Okay. It's Monday night. What are you watching on TV?
What am I watching? I'm watching... We're not good at the rapid fire at all. Wow. I've been watching The Good Place.
Oh, I love The Good Place. Okay. if you weren't creating shows right now, what would you be doing?
We stumped Brian.
Yes.
Well,
we
I think
for
I
each other.
Yeah.
Maybe we should. Yeah, we should do it together.
I would be a weird, like, self-help / like musical theater empath on YouTube, which is what I'm currently doing.
That is a cheat answer because it is literally what you're.
But it's also
doing.
The answer. It turns out it's the answer to what else I'd be doing because it's what I'm doing.
Okay. Moment that you felt you made it.
Never.
Brian, first album that you bought. Or that you can recall.
Or you had, like...
Oh, probably Celine Dion's Greatest Hits.
Yes.
Very nice.
Mine was Whitney Houston.
Yes.
Greatest Hits?
No. It was like, I was way early. I was like six.
Oh, actually, I might have paid to purchase the complete Les Mis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go. Not just the Broadway, but like the three discs.
Come on.
Complete.
Yes. Okay, Kate. Favorite perk of the job and worst pitfall of the job?
Perk of the job is collaborating. I love being in rooms with amazing people who are really talented and smarter than me. Pitfall is like how fucking long it takes to do a musical. It takes really long.
Preach.
Yeah. Okay, this is for each of you. Which wine would you pair with the other?
Which wine would I pair with Kate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like a rich Bordeaux.
Yeah.
Like something like really like complex and deep. Not like earthy. I might have said earthy before I drank this wine.
This is earthy.
You're going to say like so Andre, aren't you?
Like a $2 check.
Brian's a sparkling strawberry wine.
it's definitely a white, I think. It's a white wine.
I'm a pretty basic white girl.
I think it might be a Chardonnay. It's a little oaky. It's got some depth in there.
You don't think I would have sparkles?
I don't think you'd have sparkles. It's funny, though. We were playing this game before we got in here.
Yeah, before recording.
And I was having I have a really easy time doing this. I'm having a hard time doing this with you right now.
Oh, I feel like I know exactly what wine I am. But maybe it's just because I love it so much.
Wait, tell me what wine you are.
I would be, now I can't remember the name of it. Sparkling red.
Oh, like a Lambrusco?
A Lambrusco. I'd be a Lambrusco.
Pretty good.
That's a Lambrusco.
Pretty good. It's a little desserty. Hmm. We did not talk about Lambruscos.
No?
But
my sister and I call
one.
Them Lambruskis. Well, Lambruski, bro? Yeah, exactly.
What would you do for you? What do you think?
For me?
Yeah. We've stumped Kate.
I think I would have gone more like Shiraz than Bordeaux. Wow. Like a little bit
fruit forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like a little bit.
Okay. Is this what breaks up?
No, I think we're cool. We've been through a lot together.
All we like to do is argue with each other. Yeah. And we'll just sit and argue and figure out the exact right answer. It's part of the problem.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Well, I know that you all have stuff to get to, so I want to make sure that we can tell our listeners how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah. Can I give plugs?
Please.
Great. They're slightly emotional plugs.
Yes.
First off, Kate is doing some really, really beautiful blogging on Medium, on newmusicaltheater.com, and also on Tumblr right now. So you can find her in any of those places. One of the exciting things she's doing is she is doing, like, behind the lyrics. And so she's unpacking line by line, like, what she did on her way through some of the lyrics she wrote and the songs we wrote.
Great.
And kind of taking those apart. And they're big bites. Like, we have a song called Anyway that Emma Hunton sings on the YouTube that is a bit of a tearjerker, and she, like, dives into it. And this week, in fact, there's a blog post out that is doing the same thing with a song from the Mad Ones called Miles to Go, and it's through the lens of feminism and the events of the previous week. So it's really...
How can you not?
Right?
So it's really exciting to... certainly for me and for some other people. So if you're on Tumblr or Medium, and certainly it all ends up getting posted to Facebook, so you can follow her there, and she's pretty easy to find, and she's Kate Kerrigan on Instagram.
I'm always Kate Kerrigan on all the things.
On all of the things. For me, I took the hit of what happened with Mad Ones in December really hard and asked some existential questions about how to get writing again. Mm-hmm. And for me, that came through collaborating on the internet and opening myself up in some new ways. So I have been writing a lot of songs on the internet with fans, with like a variety of people, and have a Facebook group that people are in where people contribute lyrics and they get set. And I do like Instagram live videos with singers where we like improvise songs together on the Instagram. I have vlogs that come out twice a week that are like gut-wrenching, like this is how it feels to see the death of a show that you've worked on with love for 12 years.
Died.
It's not alive, so it's somewhere in between.
Calm down. It is not dead.
It's like a purgatory. Come on.
Purgatory.
Just trying to
and there's some fun stuff, too. Yeah. But listen, if you have any kind of affinity for the things that have been in your audition book, from Kate and I, we are actively making things, not just with the promise of them being on stage in a decade, but also with the idea that you can have those songs right now and sing them and collaborate with us right there online. And if there's just one place you're going to go, if you go to Kerrigan Loudermilk on Instagram, that's sort of a home base, or to the Kerrigan Loudermilk YouTube channel, you will find us there and we can make things with you too, because one of the things that has been really beautiful about all of this for us, about being part of that enormous YouTube explosion of musical theater, is recognizing that musical theater doesn't just take place within 8 square blocks in Midtown Manhattan,
right,
but all over the world. And so no matter where you are, if you're listening, if you love musicals and you love complex, hard-to-talk about songs that contain an enormous amount of ambivalence, then we've been making them for you. And so come make them with us, too.
Great. I love that. Jimmy, where can people find you?
Oh, I don't have as many tearjerker plugs as that. You can just follow me on Twitter.
Oh, I'm just on Twitter.
Just on Twitter. Sometimes, not even all the time. Jimmy_Robertson, and I'm on Instagram at Jimmy Robertson.
And you can find me at JMHumphrey1 on all of the things. And then make sure that you follow us at Tannins and Tunes on all the things. You can email us at tannins and tunes@gmail.com. If you want to have a show that you're interested in hearing about, or a wine that you've been drinking that you're loving right now, remember to go on and subscribe and give us a review on iTunes, because we'll pair a wine with your username.
Yes, we will.
And donate money towards the fire relief in Napa and Sonoma for every review that is posted. So make sure that you go on and do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we try to give back a little bit.
Yeah.
Thank you all so,
you
much,
so much
for joining
Who
us.
Who is the Scarlet Pimpernel?
We'll be on the road like Jack Kerouac, looking back, getting ready, let's go. Can we do? Call me crazy, but I'm much crazier. I have these plans, I have all these plans for a house that we'll build on the bay when we run away. Let me be a ride out of town. Let me be the place that you hide. We can make our lives on the go. Run away with me. Alabama, each time me up. We'll be on the road like some country song. It won't be long. We'll be ready. Let's go. I'm not trying to make you a wife here. I'm not trying to tie.